Chapter 31. Rise, Tyrus, and the frightened children crouched behind a low wall. They were on the outskirts of Helia, looking out across the fields toward the old woods. The tree line was tantalizingly close, but a dozen knights were positioned atop the hill between them and the safety of the woodlands, grim silhouettes against the setting sun, watching.
Think we can get past them?
Before Tyrus could answer, a handful of Helians broke from cover some distance eastward, sprinting desperately toward the woods. Like hounds drawn to the scent of prey, three knights wheeled their steeds and galloped to intercept them. They covered the ground with shocking speed, crouched low in the saddle, hooves churning up great clods of earth. Without slowing, they leaped over the walls, separating the fields, and lowered their spears.
They're not even going to get close,
breathed Rise, horrified.
Don't watch, children,
said Tyrus, putting his arms around the youngsters, drawing them close. Screams echoed across the open ground as the knights plowed through the distant Helians. Those who survived the first charge scattered, but the Camavorans simply wheeled and galloped after each fleeing man and woman. They were methodical and merciless, and when they were done, they laughed and cantered back to join the other knights and take up their vigil once more.
I think that answers your question.
Rise nodded.
We could perhaps wait until night.
Tyrus shook his head.
It's too open here. I think we'll need to find another way out of the city. Helia is lost.
The south gates, perhaps?
They're too far, and the children are exhausted.
Rise furrowed his brow as he considered their options.
I'm sorry, Rise.
Rise looked at him, confused by this unexpected apology.
For what?
I've been too hard on you, kept things from you. I know you've been frustrated that I haven't helped harness your innate power.
It's fine,
said Rise, feeling a pang of guilt. He was very conscious of the heavy leather-bound book strapped to his belt. So far, Tyrus had not inquired after it.
You were just looking out for me. I get that now.
It's not fine. I was trying to protect you, but I've gone about it all wrong, and for that I am sorry. You are capable of far more than I've given you credit for. I can see that now. We get through this, and I promise you things will be different.
Well, I haven't exactly been the easiest apprentice,
said Rise, looking away.
We get through this? Maybe we can both be better. Start anew.
But first, we need to get out of the city.
What about the docks?
Said Rise, cocking his head to the side.
Explain your reasoning.
I figure most of the enemy are pushing deeper into the city, or out here looking for stragglers. We're already behind their main force. There's probably not much of a rear guard for what's to threaten them. We're not far from the harbor. I say we sneak down there, find a boat, and get out that way.
Tyrus stroked his short beard.
It's not a bad idea.
Really?
Tyrus nodded.
Let's do it.
Grail strode through the scintillant tower at Viego's side while the two knights bearing the dead queen hurried along behind them. He laughed as masters ran before them in panic. He felt like a king. There was no one to deny him what he sought. All their privilege and entitlement, all their wealth and connections counted for nothing. None of their pathetic rules to keep the likes of him out of their exclusive little club meant anything now. He was the one with the power. Now they would grovel before him. They came to a giant door guarded by a pair of ornately armored custodians, ceremonial blades lowered.
By ancient decree, none but the masters of the fellowship may enter,
one of them intoned.
We are your masters now.
Our oaths are our lives,
said the other guard.
What are they saying?
Snapped Viego, not understanding their speech.
That they will die before they stand aside.
Then death is what they shall have.
They were slain an instant later, crushed against the door by the power of Viego's sorcery, their armor crumpled like paper. Grail thrust the door open, striding brazenly into the most sacred inner sanctum of the tower. Everything was marble and gold. The vaulted ceilings soared overhead, so high they were lost in shadow, and the arches around the edges of the room each contained a gleaming golden sigil. Blue-green arcane light flickered in sconces set into the walls and the pillars, lighting the gaggle of masters cowering within. They looked pathetic, clustered together and trembling like a herd of nervous sheep. Two more custodians stood before the masters, but there was no way these poor shepherds would be able to stand against these wolves.
"This is an affront and an abomination," declared
one of the masters, clearly terrified but standing defiant regardless.
"Turn aside now. Do not do this, Lord King. Whatever twisted promises that vile spider at your side has spun, they are lies."
Grail smiled when he recognized the speaker.
"Hyrach Malgoza," he
said, his grin a promise of suffering.
"I was hoping to find you here."
"You are a repulsive worm, Urlach Grail. You were never fit to step inside this hallowed sanctum 15 years ago, and you are far from fit now. You're a disgrace, a hateful little man who is never able to accept his own failings."
"And yet when the sun goes down, I'll still be here, victorious, and you'll be lying dead on the floor. No one will remember you."
"Enough talk!"
snapped Viego, stepping forward with sanctity readied, clearly intent on cutting Malgoza and the others down.
"Hold!"
barked Grail, abandoning his sycophantic deference to the king. Viego spun toward him, his long hair whipping. His eyes were wild with madness and fury.
"How dare—
You need me,"
Grail returned, spitting the words out.
"You cannot get to the Well of Ages without me."
Viego seemed about to skewer him anyway, and Grail softened his tone.
"Patience, great king. Your queen will be returned to you, but we need to handle this correctly."
Viego glanced at his lifeless wife, borne by the two knights behind them, then nodded curtly.
"Oh, just be quick about it,"
he said haughtily.
"Whatever you need from these wretches, get it and let's be on our way."
Grail gave him a mocking bow and turned back to Malgoza.
"I see you have a keystone around your neck. I'll be taking that now."
The older woman reached up, unconsciously touching the triangular stone set into her sigil of office.
"Oh yes, I know what it is, and what it opens. It must feel terrible to know that it was, in the end, you who provided me the final key to the Well of Ages."
"It will not help you."
"Because I need two of them? Yes, I know that as well."
Malgoza could not hide her surprise, but she recovered quickly.
"You may take mine, but you will never find a second keystone."
"I already have one."
She narrowed her eyes.
"You lie."
"A master disappeared more than 100 years ago. A master bearing the same sigil you wear. You fools believe that he left the Isles and was lost to history, perhaps in a shipwreck. But he never left these shores."
"Elder Holden."
"Elder Holden."
Grail nodded. Unable to resist the opportunity to gloat, he pulled out his keystone from Malgoza to see.
"Amazing what doors one of these opens. Did you know they can even access the Seeker Vault?"
"That's where you got the Waystone you gave to the Camavorans."
"Very good. It's almost like you masters have been given too much power, no? Now, give me your keystone."
"I will not."
Grail smiled.
"I was hoping you would say that.
He hurled his sickle, and the cruel blade embedded deep into Hierarch Malgerza's chest with a horrible thud. The elderly woman gaped down at it, uncomprehending, before toppling to the floor. Grail turned toward the remaining masters, his eyes cold and dead.
Now you can kill them, great king.
Hecarim bellowed in fury as he swung his curve-bladed glaive. Callista ducked beneath the lethal swing, and the blade cleaved into a nearby knight's neck, hacking deep. She stabbed up with her spear, but the Grandmaster slapped it away with the haft of his weapon and followed with a thrust of his own that she barely avoided.
Ha! Listen to me! Viego must be stopped!
Callista snarled before he could strike again. Hecarim scoffed and attacked. Callista deflected the blow, but the power of the strike left her hands ringing. Nevertheless, she struck back, twice, hitting him in the chest and the gorget. It didn't cause any real harm, but it did knock Hecarim back a step, buying her a moment's respite.
Hecarim, listen! If Viego gets to the Well of Ages, it could lead to disaster! He cannot be allowed to go ahead with what he plans!
I don't care what he intends to do. And you speak of disaster? Look around you. Disaster has already come. This city has fallen.
He came at her again, thrusting his glaive, but she swayed aside and struck at him in return, stabbing at his face. He turned at the last moment and the blow hit his helmet, snapping his head back.
Don't be a fool. You won't be spared what Viego could unleash.
Did the masters of this isle tell you that?
Hecarim shook his head, laughing.
And you believed them.
With a roar, he surged forward to drive her to the ground, but then Ledros was there, at her side. He smashed into Hecarim with his massive shield, throwing the Grandmaster off balance. Ledros's sword sliced the air, and Hecarim barely avoided it, scrambling desperately out of the way.
Face me, coward!
He bellowed, aiming a heavy downward blow at Hecarim's head. The Grandmaster thrust the sword aside with a deft flick of his glaive and riposted toward Ledros's face. The big man turned his head away, but the cruel blade sliced his neck.
Low-born bastard! You think to challenge me?
Ledros roared and slammed his shield into Hecarim, forcing him farther away from Callista. But he had exposed himself by stepping out of the line, and she fought desperately to keep the other knights from attacking him from the flank. She deflected a thrust aimed at his blindside and leaped high, stepping off the back of a fallen warrior to plunge her spear down into the knight's neck. Trying to buy himself some room, Hecarim swung his glaive around wildly. Ledros took the blow on his shield, which was wrenched out of shape, and struck back, a powerful, rage-fueled blow that Hecarim parried desperately. A knight lunged at Ledros from the side, but Callista saw it coming and struck first, landing a killing blow. She yanked her weapon free and the knight fell, but she cried out as she saw Hecarim ram his glaive into Ledros's torso. The big man shook off his sundered shield and grabbed the haft of Hecarim's glaive. Hecarim struggled to free it, but the weapon might as well have been stuck in stone. With a devastating strike, Ledros brought his sword down upon Hecarim's shoulder. The Grandmaster twisted away from the full force of the blow, but it buckled his armor, finding flesh. Hecarim roared in pain and fell to his knees. With a grimace, Ledros pulled the Grandmaster's glaive out of him and threw it aside.
Die, knowing it was a low-born bastard who bested you,
he said, lifting his sword high.
Down! Down!
Hissed Rise, ducking behind an overturned wagon. Tyrus and the children followed suit, crouching low.
What is it? Enemies?
Rise pressed a finger to his lips for silence, and a moment later they could hear several individuals approaching at pace, boots clomping. He sucked in a breath, gathering power, and glowing runes appeared within his forearms as his fists clenched. He half expected his master to try to stop him, but Tyrus simply gave him a nod and mouthed,
"Be careful."
The footsteps came closer, and Rise leaped out from behind the wagon, ready to unleash. But he pulled up short when he came face to face with a small, fierce, white-haired woman aiming a relic weapon at him.
Not being followed by any wandering spirit today, I hope, apprentice?
Asked Artificer Jendakaya with a grin as she lowered her weapon.
Wandering spirit?
Said Tyrus, stepping out from behind the wagon.
Don't worry about it,
said Rise with a slight shake of his head at the artificer. Jendakaya nodded to Tyrus in greeting, then saw the children with him, and her sardonic smile faltered. She lowered herself to their eye level and spoke to them earnestly.
I'm guessing I have you three to thank for keeping Tyrus and Rise safe.
The little boy, Tolu, nodded seriously.
Good work, young sentinels. Keep it up.
There were two assistants with the artificer, a big man in a leather apron, whom Jendakaya introduced as Piat, and a Yila, a slender woman with a shaved head. She had what appeared to be a wrapped bow over her shoulders, while Piat had what looked like a stone-headed sledgehammer across his. They also had a heavy chest of dark wood bound with silver, evidently lugging it along between the three of them. Jendakaya looked ready for a long journey, with a bulging satchel over one shoulder and a long leather case strapped across her back.
Best we stick together. We're heading to the docks.
Us too. Lady Callista said the captain of her ship could be trusted. I figured a Camavoran ship might get out without being sunk.
Didn't think of taking a Camavoran ship. That's a good idea.
Is the lady with you, then?
Asked Tyrus, searching behind Jendakaya and her assistants.
No,
she said, her voice quiet and full of regret.
She's making a stand against the other Camavorans at the Enlightenment Arch, drawing them to her. It's only thanks to her that we've gotten this far.
Rise looked at the sentinel, not immediately comprehending what she was saying.
She's sacrificing herself to save us,
said Tyrus grimly, and Rise cursed under his breath. He turned away, fists clenching, feeling helpless and even more impressed with Callista than he already had been. He dearly wished he had not made such a bad impression with her. Too late now, he thought, with regret.
She's a fool, but a better and more noble woman I have yet to meet. But come, the way is clear. We must make haste.
The Well of Ages was beneath the Scintillant Tower. The route was guarded by the most senior and trusted custodians, but none were a match for the foreign king who slaughtered them with contemptuous ease, his awesome and terrible blade cutting them down and draining their life essence.
I have read of your sword, but thought the tales exaggerated.
Grail mused as they descended through the lower sublevels beneath the tower, stepping over the emaciated corpses of the latest of the blade's victims.
Soul Render, I have heard it called.
That name is a curse,
replied Viego, his voice strangely devoid of emotion.
Spoken only by the enemies of the Argent Throne. This is the blade of the king, Sanctity. It is the most precious holy relic of my kingdom. Every Camavoran monarch since the first has been soul-bound to it.
What does it mean to be soul-bound to the blade?
Sanctity was not forged by human hands, nor even in this mortal plane. It exists only in the halls of the ancestors, the Camavoran afterlife, unless summoned forth by one soul-bound to it.
And when you die, is your soul then trapped?
No. The binding is broken the moment the wielder dies.
Viego glanced over at him and his eyes narrowed.
Why are you so interested?
Merely curious, great king.
How much farther is the water?
Not far, but the Well of Ages is protected by more than just guardians of flesh and bone. There are three locks that we will need to open in order to access the waters.
Do you have the keys for these locks, yes?
I do. In here,
said Grail, tapping first the pockets of his robe, then the side of his head.
And here.
They stepped down into a wide, cavernous space, ringed with tall columns. Every surface was of marble and gold, and painstakingly carved with bewilderingly complex geometric symbols.
Behold, the Hall of Conjunction.
Even in a city of wealth and opulence, this room was something special. Every angle, every column, and every golden line drew the gaze toward the soaring domed ceiling. Tens of thousands of glowing pinpricks of light glimmered upon the inside of the dark expanse, a perfect map of the night sky showing all the stars, constellations, and heavenly bodies as they appeared at that exact moment above the Blessed Isles. Though it was nigh impossible to see with the naked eye, the twinkling lights shifted ever so slowly, precisely tracking the movement of every star. As they gazed up, a shooting star sliced across one portion of the dome.
Nothing of its kind exists anywhere else in the known world, and no outsider has ever been privileged enough to have set eyes on it before now. You are the first, good king.
He did not add that he had never seen it before either. All that Grail knew of this place he had gleaned from the notes, scribbles, and blueprints he'd found in the sealed vaults beneath the great library. There were no more stairs down from here, or at least none that were immediately obvious. The room was dominated by a large circular dais, raised just above the surrounding geometric patterns cut into the stone. To anyone without the knowledge of what lay below, this was as deep as the sublevels went.
And where's the water?
Deeper still.
Deeper?
The king looked around in confusion.
But how do we get there?
The conjunction will lead us,
said Grail, pointing upward and enjoying the feeling of control that the secret knowledge gave him. Viego followed his gaze, staring up at the spectacle of the stars.
I see no conjunction.
No. Nor would it help us if there were one. No. The key is the precise conjunction that occurred directly above the Blessed Isles on the eve this hall was completed. And there will be no such astral occurrence for another 10,000 years. The construction of this hall was timed with masterful precision.
A flash of frustration sparked in the Camivoran king's already unstable eyes.
I do not have 10,000 years to wait. If you can open the way, do it! Now!
Grail glanced at Viego's keen blade and he nodded, bowing his head low.
Of course, my king.
He moved to a column that had a niche carved into it. Set horizontally within were parallel brass rods, each with a score of pearl beads strung upon it. The beads could slide left and right, allowing them to be set at specific intervals along the hundreds of tiny notches carved into the rods. Grail began arranging them in a precise pattern.
The vision we see above is the map of the heavens as they currently are,
he said as he worked. Satisfied, he stepped back. A heartbeat later, a silver-white glow appeared at the edge of the central circular dais, right where several intersecting lines converged nearest the column. Nodding, Grail then moved to a second column, which housed a similar array of rods and beads, and rearranged them as well.
But in order for the radiance of alignments to be unlocked, we must roll back time to that one specific moment, centuries past.
A second light began to shine on the edge of the circle, at another point of convergence. Grail moved to five more columns, causing more lights to glow in the floor. At the eighth and final column, he moved a score of beads, then paused.
And in the light of the conjunction shall the path be opened.
He pushed the final bead into place. The heavens in the dome began to move, slowly at first, then faster and faster. The moon and the stars rose and fell from west to east as time was reversed. Soon they were moving so swiftly they were a blur of light, forming solid lines streaking overhead. After a time, everything started to slow, and then all perceivable movement stopped. The heavens showed constellations that had not been seen for hundreds of years, and directly overhead the silver moon hung, surrounded by 8 perfectly equidistant stars. Those 8 stars gleamed brightly, and the light of the full moon shone down upon the circular dais below, framed by 8 matching lights. A 9th and final light began to glow in the center of the room, and a myriad of runes and arcane symbols became visible, shimmering and glowing across the floor.
Watch your footing, Lord King,
suggested Grail with an obsequious bow. No sooner had he spoken than the floor shifted.
Drop her, and your lives are forfeit.
Viego snarled at the pair of knights holding his queen as, with a grinding of stone, the entire floor, all the way out to the columns, started to sink. It was revealed that each of the summoned lights was cast by a slender pentagonal pillar, which rose like growing stalks as the floor fell away around them. The pillar in the center was the largest, an 8-sided formation that rotated like an unfurling flower as it rose. Rays of light now shone between each of the pillars, forming an intricate web of interconnecting beams above Grail and the Camivorans as they descended with the floor. When they had sunk twice a person's height, the outermost sections of the floor stopped moving, forming a series of stepped tiers, while the rest of the floor continued to sink. It was an astonishing feat of arcane construction. When the floor was intact, the stones fit together so seamlessly that anyone running their fingers across them would have been unable to discern that there were so many separate pieces. The door was suddenly thrown wide, and a handful of custodians ran in. Behind them, leaning heavily on one of the guardians, was Hierarch Malgirza. The elderly woman was pale, and the wrappings of her hastily bandaged chest were soaked with red. Grail snorted in amusement.
Don't you know when to die?
Do not do this,
Malgirza rasped, looking down at them as they continued to descend.
The dead cannot be brought back. Our earliest founders tried, and it leads only to poor souls becoming trapped on this side of the veil. Do not subject your wife to that horror.
Viego stared up at her, distrust and bitterness oozing from his expression.
Now you seek only to keep it for yourself. I will not listen to your falsehoods.
The Hierarch winced, and it was clear she would have fallen had she not been propped up.
You toy with things far beyond your understanding. I beg of you. The ruin is dangerously unstable. If you do as you intend, it could be catastrophic.
Rune? What rune?
She seeks to turn us aside with misdirection and falsehoods. Tch, the masters will protect their secrets however they can.
The rune is the source,
said Malgirza, addressing Viego.
It is what gives the waters their power.
I care nothing for the risk,
declared Viego, though Grail noted that the knights with them were looking suddenly unsure.
All that matters is that Isolde is returned to me.
Folly,
gasped the Hierarch. With a gesture, she directed the custodians forward.
Stop him!
They fanned out around the room and dropped down the first tier, armor clanking. As the lowermost platform continued to sink deeper, Viego turned on the spot, his immense blade tracking their movements. At last, the descent ceased. Grail gestured for the others to remain back, for the innermost circle began to move. Petals of stone sliding across one another and dropping down in a smooth, turning corkscrew, forming a spiraling staircase.
We must hurry.
The custodians were close now, just a few tiers above them. They were wary of Viego's blade, however, having seen what it had done to their comrades.
Quickly,
Grail said, descending the final staircase.
Give me my wife,
Viego's sword blinked out of existence, and he gently took the queen from the knights.
"Hold them off!"
he said to them, then followed Grail downward. The two knights drew axe and sword as the custodians advanced once more, emboldened now that sanctity was no longer present. As weapons clashed above them, Grail and Viego hurried down the spiral staircase into the final chamber, a vast circular room with bas-relief symbols around its exterior. It was just as the boy, Rise, had described. He noted the small stone grate where the apprentice had entered, then switched his attention to the giant golden doors, the last barrier standing between him and the Well of Ages. There were shouts and grunts of pain up above, and one of the knights tumbled down the stairs with a crash. He lay still at the bottom, though whether it was the fall or the custodian's halberds that had killed him, Grail neither knew nor cared. After a moment, several custodians descended into the chamber, blood splattered upon their white tabards.
"I will need a moment to open the doors."
Viego laid his corpse bride down upon the floor, and his immense blade appeared in his hands once more. With a gesture, he hauled a custodian toward him, then ran him through. Grail hissed in appreciation and padded over to the giant golden doors. Engraved at their center was a staring eye surrounded by flames, and he felt a tingle as he placed his hand upon it. There was the sound of turning clockwork, and a pair of triangular holes snapped open. Licking his lips, his heart beating fast, Grail pushed the keystones into place. The doors opened and white mist rolled out to greet him. The waters of life were his.